And we were so close. Welcome to the Thursday, December 7th edition of The Lowdown. Have you finished your Christmas shopping?
No. You're too peppy. We lost a championship.
Well, we didn't lose the championship. We just lost an opportunity to win the championship.
Semantics.
Well, no, like you've got to.
Will there be another chance?
And that's what the hours before the show is. We're kind of laying out the next 3 hours for you, and it's a busy 3 hours. By the way, we're going to do something a little different. I want to give you a heads up on this right now. Actually, we're going to do a whole lot of things different. First thing, WWE Live Road to WrestleMania is coming to the Golden One Center on February 10th. Tickets go on sale for this event tomorrow morning at Ticketmaster at 10 a.m. Now, we have two pairs of those tickets to give away. We're going to do one here in this 12 o'clock hour. Stick around, then we're going to do another one in the 2 o'clock hour. Okay, that's the first thing we're doing different. We're going to give two pairs away of the WWE tickets. The other thing is Nate Lundy is going to be with us. Nate Lundy of the Fantasy Football Hour, our fantasy football expert. And just because we don't really plan this thing out, we just have conversations on the air all together. Is this our last visit with Nate? Because we're in the playoffs now.
Yeah, fantasy. Yeah.
Next week is the semifinals, and if you at some point, guys, you gotta win on your own.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna call Nate next week.
Right.
This might be it.
Okay.
I mean, we could do it next week.
Yeah,
he always has
football knowledge. But yeah, I see what you're
saying. I mean, some of us have buys. You know, the really great ones have buys this week.
Yeah.
Did you get anything
for that besides a buy?
Do I? Like, I don't know. This is my last year of fantasy football, so
no, it's
I'm
not.
Just going out with a championship. Hopefully it doesn't end like last night's championship did. Nate Lundy, he normally joins us at 2 o'clock on a Thursday. He's going to join us at 1 o'clock today. So start gathering up your fantasy football questions. Don't text them yet, though, because they'll just get lost here in this 12 o'clock hour because we got a lot of things to talk about, especially your Sacramento Kings. The reason Nate's going to join us at 1 o'clock is because Garrett Temple of your Sacramento Kings is going to join us at the top of the 2 o'clock hour.
GT.
So we'll talk to him. We'll get you ready for Thursday night football, the Saints at the Falcons. We will have that game for you live here beginning at 5 o'clock on Sports 1140. And J-Ross, hey, man, that was fun to watch. And if you love basketball, you probably enjoyed that because you got to see a great player play great, and you got to see a young team fight their butts off. I was talking to my neighbor who's a gambler, and he asked me, when we were walking our dogs after the show, we just kind of ran into each other. He was like, the spread tonight's like 12.5. You think the Cavs are going to cover that? And I immediately thought, no. Like, I don't think the Cavs are going to cover because they tend to play down sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't think they played down last night. I think the Kings just played well. And I'm sure, when these win streaks start to build up, teams get tired. And I don't care how far apart the games are. I don't care how many or how few. People are talking about them winning games. They're talking about them winning 8 in a row, 9 in a row, 10 in a row. Now it's become 13. Now the story is, when are the Cavs going to lose? How well has Kevin Love been playing? You know, it starts to weigh down a little bit. And I just thought, I think the Kings might play well tonight. You know, sometimes the Kings play up to their opponents, which is the most mind-boggling thing. But they do. And I've said this a million times. I'll say it forever while we're together. You're the optimistic guy. I generally don't take optimism out of losses. I'm not like, oh, there's so much to be proud of tonight. But I enjoyed the hell out of last night's game.
Yeah, that's the way I took it.
And Jakarr Sampson, how many times have we mentioned him this week?
Maybe twice.
Did
once?
We?
Once.
If we mentioned him at all, it was you. Because I know his name didn't come out of my mouth this week. And of course, with all those guys that we talked about going down to Reno and Jack Cooley and Yorgos Papayannis being on the main roster, so to speak, here, it's Jakarr Sampson that goes for damn near 33 minutes last night.
Yep. And guarded LeBron. The game before had to play and guarded Giannis. He's been asked to do quite a bit.
Welcome to the NBA, kid.
Yeah, and I think he, along with the team, I felt the same way that you did. I was thoroughly entertained. I don't know if last night's game spills into any more than just they played well last night. But watching it, I felt like they played winning basketball. They did a lot of things right, just didn't get the reward. And what it took was LeBron James to play a terrific game, and they needed a legend to go off at the end, and he did. And the best player on the floor saved his best for last. He had his fingerprints all over the game. He was great, and they needed all of that. So they pushed the Cavs to the limit, and the better team won, but they made them earn it. And I thought, you know, again, no moral victories, no, hey, good job, Kings. But they should feel good about the way they played. You just have to transfer that into more games, and if they do that, they'll find some success.
44-11-40, I'm sure a lot of people want to jump in on the conversation just looking over at the text line right now. 44-11-40, that's the text line. That's right in front of us. Of course, you can get in on these phone lines. And by the way, this 12 o'clock hour would be a great hour to get in on the phones if you decide to do so. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We did see a couple of things that really stood out to me last night, Jason. One, Zach Randolph is playing really, really well.
Best on the team right now.
And I think it's by far.
Yes.
I always, you know, he had 18 and 10, 6 assists. He took 20 shots to get those 18, but the fact that a Sacramento King is taking 20 shots, I don't think that's a bad thing, actually. It just, we generally see with Kings players a lot lower volume of shooting, and it's spread out across the pace. I like that Zach Randolph has kind of taken the initiative there, or the Sacramento Kings have made it the initiative to go make sure Zach Randolph gets his touches and gets some such. But we saw three players play 30-plus minutes. I don't know for sure, but I don't think we've seen that this year.
If it has, it's maybe one other time.
Right.
Very small handful, if it have at all. But, yeah, kind of trimmed the rotation a bit, played 10 guys. I say that's true, but normally there are 11 maybe, so 10, one less, bulk minutes. I liked most everything they did. The one thing I didn't quite understand in the flow of the game, and again, this is when you watch and you second guess, but I wondered when Coach went back to George Hill and De'Aaron, and he took out Bogdanovich and Mason, and that might have been around the four-minute mark, and the last 3 or 4 minutes, the Kings didn't score. They had a 24-second shot clock violation. I think they went 0-for-4 in the last 3 minutes after they tied the game. And Bogey really wasn't playing that great, but Mason was. And I didn't like Fox coming back in at that moment, which is funny to say, but I thought Mason was playing better and should have been in maybe to finish.
And it felt like it was, with all of that you just said, it still feels like it was that offensive rebound that wound up killing them.
Yeah.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that offensive rebound resulted in LeBron's step back.
The step back three that made it 5, which ended the game. But you get the rebound, it's still 2. You hit a 3 for a win or a 2 for the tie, they're still playing. But you gave him one more shot, and then LeBron's shot was ridiculous. Samson's defense
Wade
was good.
Wade the trigger. 5 seconds on the shot clock, 20 seconds on the game clock. It's lobbed to LeBron. He's at the right point. He works on Samson. Step back three. He nails it!
That's the Cleveland Radio Network, as you may have guessed there. But again, as you noted there, that's the difference when you have the best player in the world on your team.
Yep.
And overall, the Cavs were fine. I mean, Kevin Love had a weird game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he played bad. He didn't. He couldn't hit a 3 to save his life, but you knew he was there. Jakarr Sampson was another funny one in that it felt like you knew he was there. Like the entire, he only scored, what, six? He scored 6 points, but you knew that he was out there.
Yeah, they were loud points.
It was the most dramatic 6 points of the night.
Yeah.
But 16 rebounds. I think that's more than Jorgis Papayannis has in his entire Kings career. I can't confirm that.
Yeah.
Tex Nation, look that up for me, but that might be more than Jorgis Papayannis has in his whole career.
And there, it's the energy that they were looking for. And he had to guard LeBron. LeBron gave him praise afterwards, saying he guarded him well. But it's just energy, effort, hustle, trying to maximize his opportunity. And he's probably of the, I don't even know if I'm going to call him a big, but he's a bigger perimeter guy that can move a little bit. So when we're trying to say Garrett Temple can guard a lot of the good opposing perimeter guys, Jakarr's bigger than Garrett. And so maybe that's where his advantage. So the last 2 games, like I said, he's had to guard the Greek Freak and now LeBron. LeBron went off, but by and large, I think he did a pretty good job.
You mentioned LeBron talking about Jakarr Sampson. That I think was on Cleveland television. In here, that is.
Jakarr has been playing me tough all game, you know, and you know, I know him. He knows me from our summertime workouts back at St. V. But you know, big brother always gonna have the last laugh.
Because of that deep-rooted connection, how much did you relish the challenge all night long?
Well, I relish the challenge versus anyone. But especially, you know, when you get to go against someone that you've trained with, that you've, you know, kind of laid the path, you know, the path for, especially in Jakarr. And I'm just happy to see him back at this level. Works extremely hard, you know, he's a great competitor. And you know, I'm happy Sacramento's giving him an opportunity.
But Big Brother always going to get the win. Big Brother always going to come out on top, LeBron went on to say. So high praise there. For the Cleveland native, Jakarr Sampson. Now we got the Pelicans tomorrow night.
For no championship.
No championship on the line, man, but there was some high-quality basketball last night. Durant had a triple-double. LeBron, I think, was an assist shy of a triple-double last night. And, you know, I love triple-doubles. And DeMarcus Cousins, man. Are you kidding me? Like, it almost feels weird. Like, we cover... I can't speak for any other show on this network. We cover the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
What DeMarcus is doing, regardless of how you feel about him, regardless of how you feel about trades, is freaking. What he did last night was pretty freaking incredible.
Yeah, when I saw, I had forgotten what was going on a little bit with Denver in that I knew Millsap was out, but also when Jokic was out, I went, oh man.
Mm-hmm.
And no Anthony Davis, in one sense, plays to DeMarcus to be a little bit of a one-man show, and he's more than capable of doing that. And I thought, you're starting Fareed on him? Okay. This is not going to go well. And then, you know, they tried Plumlee, a few other Lyles. It was like, all right, this isn't going to go well. And DeMarcus took advantage of it. He was great.
A couple of texts here. Want to read to you at 44-1140. Again, if you want to get in on the phone lines, this first hour is a great hour to do it. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. I agree with Jay Ross. I thought pulling Frank was very questionable. It just didn't make sense to me. Another text here from Tex Nation. I hope they keep Jakarr and move down Papa. Finally, a spark. I would love to hear Jaeger's reasoning for pulling Bogey and Frank for Fox. Why? I don't care that they lost. I want to know what's going through Jaeger's head for such a dumbass move.
I didn't have as much of a problem, like I said, with Bogey. He was playing okay. He couldn't make. He had so many wide open shots, didn't make it, but he was doing other things, had some great passes. And I think he brought Hill in with Fox. I didn't mind the Hill part. It was just Fox for Mason. I went, that's rookie for rookie. But at the moment, I thought Mason was playing better.
We're all over the place here on the text line. I'm happy the Kings lost, honestly. I wanted the number one pick. That's on the text line. We said there's different camps of Kings fans. Yeah. That's one of them right there. No moral victories for a seasoned vet team, but I think plenty for a young team in rebuild. Fair enough. Would have loved to see Frank Mason on the floor during the last couple of minutes last night. Yeah, Frank Mason wasn't on the floor, and Garrett Temple wasn't on the floor there in the final few minutes. And I think a lot of times you see coaches do offensive defensive switches where they'll bring a certain unit in, especially in the final minutes, and it. What really killed Jaeger's ability to do that, if he was going to do it, was the offensive rebound.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, you kind of go in with a certain situation that, well, if we, you know, we'll go out there with this unit, try to get a basket, nothing happens. If we can get an offensive rebound, we can call time, send a different group in there. That didn't happen. But I was surprised that Garrett Temple wasn't in there. And I'm not even saying Garrett had to be guarding LeBron James because – you heard LeBron's praise for Jakarr Sampson. I don't know who in the league would have guarded LeBron any better last night.
That shot,
like,
nobody.
I mean, I don't know his defense on that final possession. I have zero issue with.
Yeah, I agree.
I have zero issue with it all. I don't know what Garrett Temple could have done any differently, but just having your best defensive player out there on the floor. I mean, he only played 18 minutes last night, 19 minutes. But if there's a possession to put him in, I feel like it's that one. A lot, and that's something that has come up a lot over the last few days, is a lot of people asking questions about Dave Yeager's rotation and not particularly understanding them. I thought last night might be a moral victory night for Dave Yeager and his coaching staff. I stuck around on the post game. I wanted to see what Coz and DC had to say, and I caught Katie's conversation with Dave Yeager, and it didn't. First of all, I wish Dave Yeager had like half a personality in front of a camera, because I can't like tell anything from him, and maybe that's by design, and you know whatever, that's fine. But he didn't look like a guy who was just happy that they competed with Cleveland. Like I think there's a point where you're happy you compete, but then there's a point where you're up 15, you're up in the fourth quarter, you have a chance to win, and you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you say that, by the way, because we record those and play them on our postgame on the radio. The loss to Milwaukee, if we played the tone and then the loss to Cleveland, he sounded happier in Milwaukee.
Mm.
Happier, if that, whatever that, mm-hmm. It was more of a lively, he sounded a little bit upset that they lost, right? Isn't that what you're taking from yesterday? As opposed to, yeah, there's no moral victory sound tone to him in that.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, I think if you take away up 15, if you make that game last night, if it plays out the same way, except instead of the Kings being up by 15 at one point, and another thing we haven't pointed, the Kings had a bad fourth quarter shooting.
Yeah,
I know you mentioned the final 3 minutes, but we had another one, and I've lost track now. I have to go back maybe 3 or 4 games. I know the last time I looked, we were at 23. It's probably a little bit higher now, but it's at least the 24th quarter that the Kings have scored in the teens. Mm. They scored 17. In the fourth quarter.
In the last quarter,
I mean, that's probably going to happen if you go 3 minutes without being able to get a basket.
Right.
But if that game plays out the same way and it's back and forth instead of Kings up 15 and wind up blowing that lead, or LeBron, you know, getting hot the way that he did, maybe Dave Yeager's tone plays out a little bit different. And again, Yeager's tone is really tough to read, especially, true, you know, talking to Katie, because Katie talks to him in a very, like, soft-spoken, almost like they're in a library and they're trying to get this conversation across, and you don't want to interrupt what everybody else is doing. So Dave Yeager doesn't, you know, he kind of talks like this also. And his head was down, and I'm looking at him, I was like, oh, this guy wanted to win. Yeah. There was no, hey, good job, guys. Wait, hey, Jakar, great job. There was like, hey, man, we blew a 15-point lead on the road. We had a chance to win this game in a game that we played really well.
Yeah, they did. They really did.
Any other takeaways from that? We got to get back here to the text line because, you know, it's like it always is after Kings games. It's pretty hot today.
Yeah, the one takeaway, when you said about the last texter that was wondering about Dave Yeager's rotations, I don't know that we have to totally grasp it, but I think the players need to. You know, like if we're kind of going, I'm not sure, but as long as they know, that's better, but I don't know if they know.
I was told before Yeager got here, when the signing was mm-hmm. done, one of the first things I was told is that he's not media friendly, and he has a media persona. Mm-hmm. So my feeling is the guys, and I don't know this for a fact because I'm not in the locker room. My feeling is the guys in the locker room know.
That's important.
They know his tone. We don't have to.
Yeah.
Like, what are we? Like, we would like to.
Right.
And there are a few coaches that are great about giving us a very clear window of what they're feeling.
Yeah.
Yeager isn't that guy, and that's fine. But I think, to kind of respond to what you, I from things that I've been told about his time in Memphis, his players know
what their playing time will be.
Yeah. His players know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think sometimes you might see, like, it was pretty predictable under other coaches. This is your starting five. This mm-hmm. sub is the first. This one might be. And then if something's weird, then it's this guy. It's not that way with this team.
And I don't know.
What would be the group? What would you do?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's, you know? Because, like, last night, I'm saying I would have played Mason more.
Right.
But I don't think that's foolproof. Hey, every game, Frank Mason needs to finish the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I think it could be a game-by-game, case-by-case basis. There isn't an all-star. We can't separate number 1 through number 13 very easily.
Right.
So to say these 7 need to play, okay, really? Or this 8, or definitely this group with this group? I mean,
I feel like you got to play guy. And again, what do I know? You play the guys that are playing well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Frank Mason has played well. Like, it would be weird to me if Jakar Sampson played 10 minutes tomorrow.
I agree. After this game, you mean?
Right.
Yeah.
And especially who he's going against. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be all hands on deck tomorrow against DeMarcus Cousins and the Pelicans down there. But I think that's where, if you're a player, you start to look around like, hey, like, I had 16 rebounds. I played 33 minutes, and the night after I played, or two nights after, I played 12. Like, what do you want from me? If I'm Frank Mason, maybe I'm asking that question. Like, what am I missing? Like, what is it that you want me to do better? Because I feel like I've played pretty well over the course of the last few games. I feel like I've made the most of the minutes that you've given me.
Yeah. And just looking at just minutes, the two guys off the bench that if we say points are how you're kind of evaluated, that we would say play best, play the most minutes, Buddy and Frank.
Yeah.
But could they have played a little more? Could they, I mean, that's, yeah, I mean, that's always the, and I don't know that I was feeling De'Aaron playing that great or that poor. It was kind of indifferent to me. I mean, but I thought Frank was outplaying him yesterday. And so then to come back to Frank, or excuse me, come back to De'Aaron, I thought was curious.
Obviously, the Kings didn't win last night, and we're, you know, they're 7-17 here at this point. But do they lose anything, miss anything, if Kosta Koufos just comes out of the rotation completely? He played 16 minutes last night.
Yeah. I think the way they're constructed now without Scal and without Willie, yes. But if everybody's there, no, I don't think too much. I would say they were pretty light rebounding, but they actually won that department yesterday.
Fair to say Willie's not going to Reno.
Right.
Okay, so
and he's just recovering.
Right, so Willie comes back from his back injury. I don't know what the use is for Kosta Koufos on this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he can play. I think he can help you. I think there's some stability. But I also think in that statement, he's a guy that they could look at moving.
Right. Right. And yeah. and if one guy, you know, for the please trade the vets – movement that's out there, and that's a big movement. I think Kosta.
That makes some sense.
I think Kosta would probably be gone in February. This is his year, right? His expiring year?
Yeah, I think so. And his contract's very team friendly.
So I feel like Kosta, because there's a purpose for Garrett. We know that. There's a purpose for George Hill. We know that. Vince Carter, whether it's off the floor, he has a purpose out there. Mm-hmm. Kosta, I don't know as much about, because I feel like if you need a vet with that group, it's Zebo.
Yeah. But I guess it just
and that's not. I'm not trying to knock him. Right, like I'm not trying to. I don't feel like it fits.
Just one counter to that would be, if you think about the young bigs, Giles isn't playing. Scal's been moved down once. Papagiannis has been down. I mean, there's not a lot of other big bodies. But you might have to then just say, all right, Scal, you're playing more. Willie, you're playing more. Zebo, kind of really rely on those three, which might be okay.
If that's the direction you're going, I think it should be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Couple more here. Very disappointed in the coach's rotation decisions. That's come across a lot over the last couple of games and how he's handled the playing time of Scal. Not cool. By the way, it's frustrating, just inconsistent. That's a follow-up there on that text. How did Scal do in Reno?
Oh, my goodness. He went off.
Yeah, and that's
20. I think it was a 25-18 and 7 blocks.
But is that good or bad? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. And I hear that level isn't the greatest for bigs. So, like, there's a lot of smaller guys. So, is it just, like, literally he's the biggest guy out there getting every rebound? I don't know.
And then and
I
again,
saw the stats.
We go back to the question, what's better, him playing down there and having that line that he had or playing the 16 minutes that Kosta Koufos played?
It's a great question. Hard to quantify.
So no linear championship for the Sacramento Kings.
Two.
We're already calling an audible on the day. I just got a message from Nate Lundy. Nate Lundy's going to join us a little later in the show. We'll explain that to you. Roger Goodell's got his contract signed, sealed, and $200 million to be delivered. What's his first order of business? We'll touch on that next here on Sports 1140. And there's not a lot encouraging about a spinal stabilization surgery.
That just sounds awful.
Ian Rappaport also reported that the surgery will take months to recover from before he can even consider returning to football. So I really don't care. I'm sure he does. I really don't care if Ryan Shazier plays football again. I want him to walk again. I want him to, if he has kids, to be able to play with them. I want him to do all that. And we're going to get back into that conversation here in just a minute, a little bit. And you'll also hear one of his teammates that's making the rounds today. It's making the rounds on television. It's making the rounds on social media. But you'll hear what Mike Mitchell had to say about the NFL. WWE Live Road to WrestleMania is coming to the Golden One Center February 10th. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. at all Ticketmaster outlets. But because the lowdown's got the hookup, holla if you hear me. We've got your tickets right now. 339-1140. 1-800-920-1140. I did get the rundown from WWE. AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, The New Day, they will all be in attendance right now as scheduled.
My guys. For this Becky Lynch?
I did not see Becky Lynch's name on the rundown. But we got Nakamura. Come on, man. That's your guy.
That's right.
We got. Let me double check. Maybe Becky was on the rundown here. This is how professional I am, not having this pulled up hours ago. We're a professional radio broadcast here, folks. The Usos, Charlotte, your other girl, will be there. New Day, Kevin Owens, AJ Styles. Those are just a couple of the names scheduled to be at the Golden 1 Center February 10th for WWE Live Road to WrestleMania. If you don't win these tickets here, no worries. You'll have another opportunity to win them in the 2 o'clock hour. Garrett Temple of your Sacramento Kings will join us at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. And I mentioned we got to call a little bit of an audible here. Nate Lundy will join us at 2:30.
Okay.
So we're making a little switch there. Yeah. Garrett Temple at 2 o'clock, Nate Lundy at 2:30. It'll be a packed final hour of the lowdown, as well as your next opportunity to win tickets to WWE Live Road to WrestleMania at the Golden 1 Center. We'll get back into the Sacramento Kings probably at the top of the 1 o'clock hour, because there's some really good basketball played last night. Tennessee has their man. I don't know if they got their
man.
They got a football coach. Yeah. I've got some suggestions for Philip Fulmer as well. We'll touch on that in the 1 o'clock hour. But, Jason, as we told you yesterday, Roger Goodell has signed his 5-year, $200 million contract with incentives, mind you. Many NFL players took to social media, took to Twitter to ask some questions about Roger Goodell's contract. I think Joe Thomas posed the question. He makes $40 million. Tom Brady makes $20 million. Does that mean Roger Goodell is twice as valuable as Tom Brady? I don't think that's how it works, but he did have a funnier tweet before that. And what did it say? Joe Thomas wrote, "Who exactly was the NFL bidding against to sign Roger Goodell to
a point?
Because we always hear that with players, right? And I was like, hey, Joe Thomas is a guy you respect.
Yes.
Joe Thomas is universally respected in the world of the NFL. There were plenty of questions. Is Roger's money guaranteed? What if ratings continue to fall? Do we knock off some of that guaranteed money? So players had, I would say players had fun, but I don't think there was anything fun about the way they were looking at Roger Goodell's contract extension yesterday. So my question, Jay Ross, now that we've had a chance to kind of look at the details and kind of digest all this, Roger Goodell is going to be around for a long time. By the time 2024 is done, it's 18 years he would have been the commissioner. He would have made just shy of $500 million as the commissioner of the NFL. It's his first order of business.
I have a couple thoughts for him. One is just kind of what you alluded to, and I don't know how he fixes this one, and it's probably going to take some time, but his own perception I think he needs to work on. And that's across the board, because I think if you had a big conference room filled with fans, and ladies and gentlemen, Roger Goodell, boo!
Oh, yeah.
A huge conference room filled with the players. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, Roger Goodell. Boo.
I think it'd be worse.
Ownership,
I think it'd be worse than boo.
Ladies and gentlemen. Boo? I mean,
well,
I think not as much.
There'd be one loud Southern boo.
But that's an important one. And
I
so
guess.
I think that's all entwined, though, in a couple of things. One is the crux of what a lot of people have an issue with, and it isn't clear, is player safety. Mm-hmm. And so what are players loudly speaking on? Less about the hitting. More about, you're making us play on Thursday nights? All right, listen to the players a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Fans are talking about, media's talking about ratings. I would ignore that. I think that's 100% irrelevant, in my opinion, because are you going to get another football contract after the next one's up?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're worried about that, if that's in jeopardy, then worry about ratings. But that's not, the next time contracts are up, football is getting signed again.
And mind you, and reality shows, I mean, what are you going to replace football with? Like, if I'm
CBS
Roger Goodell,
no.
or if yeah. I'm, you know, the lawyer or the agent who negotiates this NFL contract with the television markets, and NBC comes to you and says, you know, ratings fell 7%. Oh, for real? okay, you tell me. 7%, let's see. So what are you down to, 20 million?
Yeah,
you tell me
one.
What you're going to put on in that time slot
right.
on Sunday that's going to draw more than 14 to 20 some odd million people.
Yeah.
You tell me.
Right.
That would be my argument.
Yeah, so I think these are all kind of intertwined. If, like, you know, listening to the players a little bit about their version of what they're talking about safety. Also listen to players, what are they talking to you about the inconsistency of these fines and the disciplines?
Mm-hmm.
And so if there could be a more hard and fast, steady, right now, a violation of substance abuse is 4 games at a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know what I do. What happens if I get caught? I take a swing at you, might get a game.
And mind you, substance abuse is both PEDs and recreational.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make that clear.
Yeah. But then the other stuff, the violence part, oh, that was targeting or a dangerous hit. We're going to look at that. That's a game. But I swung at you. You grabbed my chain. That's it. Just all this
you
is.
Grab my chain. You're suspended 2 games for grabbing that chain.
Yeah. So just try to get a little bit more of a hard and fast rule. There could be some black and white, but something that kind of fits in some guidelines so everybody's not guessing what's happening.
A couple of things, J. Ross. Targeting isn't a rule in the NFL right now.
Questionable hits.
And I think that's a problem. There should be, and you should figure out a way to, I guess, police that, to referee that, to officiate that, or whatever. I want to go back to what your original point was. You said you want Roger Goodell to work on his own image.
Yeah,
his own image. He can't, because Roger Goodell's image isn't his. Roger Goodell's image is the image that the owners have created.
Right.
He's the fall guy. He's the bulletproof vest for Jerry Jones and for Bob McNair and for all those guys.
Yeah.
But that's why it doesn't matter what we think about him. It matters what they think about him. So that's why, as much as I dislike Jerry Jones, that's why it was a big deal that Jerry stood up and said, yeah, we're not doing this. That's why it was a big deal that he sent his puppet Papa John out there to bitch and complain about the way the NFL is handling itself. That's why it's a big deal, is because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that New England boos him. It doesn't matter that he goes to the NFL draft and gets introduced and booed. It matters if the owners have an issue with him. And right now, at least it appears, only one owner has an issue.
Does it matter if the players have an issue with him?
No.
Okay.
Because those are the two sides that are against each other. They're not on the same team.
And I think that's a problem. Like, if they could get closer, you're not going to agree on everything. And players are going to see that contract and go, exactly what Joe Thomas said. What, he's worth this amount of money, he's getting paid this much. But if there's a way to hear the players, implement some of what they want, hear the owners, implement. And again, I'm not saying this is an easy task, but I feel like there's still a gap here that's creating some issues amongst the league. And one of the bigger ones, honestly, to me, is I really think the players hate Thursday night football.
Mm-hmm.
And that falls in line with safety.
But who loves it?
Probably
the owners.
Because of the television deal they've already agreed to.
Exactly. Now, players get – now think about this for a second. Players hate it. They get – I heard the number – $132,000 extra dollars for playing in that game, the Thursday night game. Every team plays in it. Not counting Thanksgiving. That does not count as a Thursday night football game. That's why the Cowboys – and I think Washington both played in it 2 times in a row.
Yeah, correct.
But the owners get millions and millions and millions and millions and millions, and the NFL as a whole gets billions of dollars for playing that Thursday night game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they're not going to say no, but the player's voice has to get louder.
I mean, let's play it down and say hundreds of millions versus $132,000. And I think the players are starting to look at it like it's not worth it. I want you to hear Mike Mitchell, the safety for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I want you to hear what he had to say. We'll continue to take these text messages, these calls as well. We're back with more of the Lowdown next. If they put bye teams on Thursday night, it wouldn't be an issue. Text line here at 44 11 40. We're trying to solve all of Roger Goodell's problems. We pretty much solved most of the world's problems, not all of them. If you ever go to whatever your news station is, you know that we haven't solved all of them, but we're working on them.
Yep.
And we're working on Roger Goodell. We don't want Roger Goodell to be so hated. I don't think that's going to happen, especially when you got guys like Mike Mitchell. This audio, well, I'll let you hear it, and then you, meaning all of you collectively, share your thoughts on this. 44-11-40, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Here it is in pieces. Here's Mike Mitchell, safety for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
This is football. If you want to see flag football, then let's take our pads off. That would make it easier for me because now I don't got to wear heavy. But give us flags for me to pull off because that way I know what we're playing. You know, I signed up to play full-speed contact football, and we're not doing that. I feel like I got to ask a guy, hey, are you ready for me to hit you right now before I hit you? And that's crazy.
So that's just a piece of it. He goes on to talk about some hits are unavoidable.
I'm going to mess around and get hurt trying to protect an offensive player because he's running an over route. Damn it, your quarterback shouldn't have threw that ball messed up. That happened 2 years ago. I'm not joking at all. Andy Dalton threw a ball to Tyler Eifert 2 years ago. Tyler Eifert had to dive for it. I was aiming for his gut. But if he don't dive, he don't get in the head. That's 50 grand out of my pocket, though, because Andy throws a bad ball. I'm going to mess around and get hurt trying to protect an offensive player because he's...
That's the same one. Sorry. Here's one more. I think Matt Hasselbeck or something said something about him on one of the football shows. He didn't take kindly to that.
And at first you're taking our money, but now, you know, I got... like Matt Hasselbeck calling me a dirty player and trying my character, and we've never met before. I donate more money to Cincinnati underprivileged kids than probably people on the Bengals. So don't give me that name. My nephew goes to school there, man. I take all that personally. If you don't know me, if you never had a conversation with me, don't judge us by what you see on football, because football is my competitive side. We got to do better as players when we sign the next CBA. We got to get better leadership as who's running the league, because obviously everybody from fans, owners, players are all disappointed in Roger Goodell. We just got to do better. We can't have a guy where you just hand out discipline on how you see fit. There needs to be a set guideline of how we do what we do.
I think you just said that.
That's it. That whole thing. Everything he said there is how I'm trying to correlate it all into one of the perception of Goodell, whether it's him or the league or whatever. There's Mitchell that's clearly not happy with the way the game is being governed on the field. Also, the way they agreed to their own, that's their own fault, to agreeing to the deal they have as a players association. They've got to figure out another way to feel better about their situation against the league, against the owners. But there's just too many different wrinkles in there that have a lot of people unhappy.
Dear God. Sometimes I'm just fascinated by what comes through this text line. Can somebody please explain to me how the hell Kaepernick got Person of the Year? It took that long to get to Kaepernick. Disrespectful to the flag. Damn it, this is America. Gets kicked out of the NFL, and he gets rewarded. What are we coming to? It's scary. Sir, you're an idiot. You're actually much worse than an idiot, and I can't deal with you right now. How about this one? Boy, text line strong on the side of Mike Mitchell. Strong on the side. How about this one? Boom, straight. You either sign up to play football or you don't. Personal effing responsibility. Or is that now dead? Brian and Sack says he's spitting the truth. Couple other texts here. I side with Mitchell. He was right on the button. Right above that, Mitchell is an idiot. Well, I don't think Mitchell is an idiot at all. I think he expressed the way that he felt, and he was honest about it. But one clip that I didn't play as we tried to cut that audio down into various portions, and edit it, by the way. Sorry about that. He goes on to say this is a man's game. This is a grown man's game. And men play football. Grown-ass men play football. That's what he said. And that, I'm fine with a lot of things that he said. I'm fine with what he said about the collective bargaining agreement because he's 1,000% accurate. I'm perfectly okay with what he said about wide receivers and throwing the ball over the middle and it being a bad, you know, pass by the quarterback. I actually saw that clip that he was talking about where Andy Dalton made a bad throw and he tried to dive. It's basically both guys diving at the same time. They went head to head. He got the flag. He got the fine. That's what he was talking about right there. And I think he touches on a number of points that are perfectly accurate. My issue comes when he says, you know, this is a man's game. This is a grown man's game. This is what we do. Well, I'm a man and I'm a grown man, and I still don't think your sport is safe. And I think there are things that officials or the NFL as a whole can do to make it safe. And let's not ignore the fact the movie Concussion and the Frontline documentary and all of that has less to do with concussions in the NFL and more to do with the fact that the NFL tried to hide the fact that NFL players were suffering from concussions for decades. And that's why that famous steel curtain, the whole steel curtain is freaking dead. There's a reason for that. And that is what that's all about. Now the NFL's like, well, I said this to you yesterday. We're a violent sport. If you're the NFL and you come out and say, look, we're a violent sport, and we're going to try to make this as safe as we can, but the bottom line is we're violent. These guys are going to be hurt. There's only so much we can do. And leave it at that. I'd almost be more okay with that than them. It feels like they're phony policing this thing. They're not. Go back to your original thing. There needs to be a consistent way of punishing.
Yeah.
And there's not.
Yeah, and I think I hear what Mitchell's saying, and I hear what you're saying, too, on the hey, it's a man's – I think we're talking about semantics, what he means by that. And I think it's the mentality of the sport, meaning that
– But I think I feel like that's a tired caveman mentality.
Well, I don't mean like, hey, we're all barbarians. It's that is the nature of the sport. You have to have a different mentality. For example, I tried to play football 1 year. I did not have the mentality needed to be successful. I would not want to get in a ring. I don't want to fight anybody. I don't. I wouldn't have that any less of a. But you have to have that a little bit of a. I don't know of another way to say it, but that edge and that fire in your mind that I am out to compete and it's combat, whether that's football, whether that's boxing, whether that's MMA. That's kind of the nature.
You have to be willing to fight and get hit.
That's in there. Mm-hmm. It's in the DNA of the sport. Now, some positions there's less, right? Kicking and quarterbacks. But I think he's feeling like you're trying to take that away from him. And he doesn't want that.
This text here, who cares if you don't think it's safe? Oh, okay. These guys aren't playing this game with the gun pointed at their heads. If you don't want to end up screwed up later in life, don't play. You know what I think is so stupid about that is who the hell are you to judge the way football should be played? And don't text me back that I played high school football. STFU, man, stop. Stop with the high school football text. No one gives a crap.
Right.
You didn't play in the NFL. If Adrian Ross comes in here and says, look, this is why certain things happen. And I follow Adrian Ross in every form of social media, and I know he's frustrated with a lot of things as well because he was a defensive player. And I think defensive players a lot of time get the shaft in this whole conversation because they get hurt as well, but no one cares about that. And I don't think it's up to us as fans or people who played full pad football for 4 years to argue the way that the NFL should be played. Because unless you've been hit by a 280-pound individual who can run a 4.240, look at the Ryan Shazier play.
Right.
That wasn't a dirty play.
Right.
Look at the Joe Mixon play, the play that doesn't even get talked about from Monday. A running back was knocked unconscious on the football field. No one's talking about it because of how freaking violent that football game was. He was unconscious. No, there was nothing illegal about that.
Right.
It's just a violent game.
And people saying that they don't care about safety in the NFL, what's the conversation people are having the most now? I don't know if I want my kids to play.
Right.
Like, and if you don't have kids playing, people aren't growing up with football, then you're going to have a generation not wanting to play football, and then where's the NFL 20, 30, 40 years from now?
Nothing annoys me more than these phony-ass tough guys. Those are the people that I, like, literally hate. Because you don't play. You can't police it. You can't judge it. You can't determine, well, this is the way it should be played. Why? Well, because I watched NFL films from the 70s and that's the way it was played. No, man, it's not. Oh, well, they don't play with a gun to their head. Okay, cool. When football is gone in 20 years, you find some other way to be a degenerate gambler. You find something else to do with your Sundays. Because at some point, people are going to realize, don't worry about Ryan Shazier. Don't worry about Mike Mitchell or Ben Roethlisberger or whoever your favorite player is. Worry about 10 years from now when all these kids growing up and their parents go, no, man, no, player, you're not playing this game. When Ken Rudolph says, I gained so much from youth football, I want my son to play. But his wife says, no, you kidding? No, this game is too violent. We're not doing it. Then come to me and have those conversations. But this phony, I'm tough, this is a man's game, that's so antiquated, man, and you're so played. You're so played. Like, that's lame. You've got to think outside your own personal little world here.
But if
and I'm dealing with these texts like, oh man, why are you such a baby? Why are you so weak? Why? No, like, I have compassion. Like, I told you, I felt guilty watching that freaking game the other night.
Yeah, but if you're in that world, if you're a player, I don't think you can have any other approach.
I understand that. Why can't we change that? Why can't we change the approach?
Though?
I don't know. I would be making $40 million a year if I knew. Hell, I'll take 20.
And he's joking, flag. It's not flag. That's not the answer. But is there a way to have the happy medium? And I don't know either.
I don't know. Guys on hold, hang tight. These texts are coming in, mostly not nice. We'll read all of them because we don't shy away from it. We'll continue this as we kick off hour number two next.